Mr. Atkind, reel 6. Mr. Atkind, at the end of reel 5, we were talking about the gypsies who were camped on the edge of the ghetto, all of whom were killed by the criminal police. Can you tell me a little bit more about the role of the criminal police in the ghetto?
Well, there was a two-story building in the middle of the ghetto, near the post office, near where I worked, and I had to pass it twice a day. Nobody was allowed to walk on the same side of the street where the building was. And it was there were Volksdeutsch, Germans who were of Polish origin were working there. Usually they were walking not in uniforms, just with a small, in civilian clothes, with a small swastikas in their lapels. And they would, they were torturing people in order to extract their possessions. Usually they would deliver, I know exactly what happened, because it happened to some parents of my friends. I'll describe one incident. The father, one of the girls who worked at the post office, got the notice to, in the evening, he got the notice to appear the following morning at the Kripo building. You can imagine what sort of night that person spent. When he arrived there, a German in a room would greet him. He would smiling, would sort of greet him and speak Yiddish. Yiddish is similar to German, and he would on purpose probably speak Yiddish and say, "Sit down. We know that you have, we know all about it. You were a rich man before the war. You have hidden jewelry and foreign currency. And to save yourself some trouble and us, it's better if you give it to us now, and then you can go home." The person, whether he had anything or didn't have, he would first of all deny and say, I haven't got anything. Whatever I had before was taken away from me, you know, at the beginning, earlier on, and so on and so on. Suddenly the man would open the drawer and with a whip hit him over the face, and then our two men would come from behind and beat him up for a few minutes. And afterwards, if he was unable to raise himself, they would kick him and punch him. Two men with a stretcher would come in, take him into a room, a cell, and the same man at the table would say, "I'll see you tomorrow morning at exactly the same time. You've got 24 hours to think it over and, you know, and have a nice rest or whatever." His wounds would be bandaged. A doctor would come in, or a male nurse, examine his wound, the damage that was done to him, and he would be fed, and he would spend the 24 hours in that room on his own, hearing from time somebody crying or shrieking, you know, with pain. Sometimes he would see someone hanging in the garden, which now and then we could see it as well from a distance. In other words, he would be terrified for the 24 hours. He would be fed and receive medical help. The following morning, at the same, in his cell, there would be a large electric clock so that he would know exactly the time. The following morning, at the same time, the same person would again sitting behind his desk, smiling, say, "Well, did you think it over? Are you ready now to tell us where you've got your diamonds and the dollars and so on and so on. If he didn't have anything, and again he started, you know, saying, I haven't got anything, I swear, and so on, he would again be beaten. And that would go on, so that if he didn't have anything, he would be dead within a week to a fortnight. If, on the other hand, he did have anything hidden, after 2 days or 3 days, he would reveal the place, oh yes, I had some jewelry and I have hidden it. In that case, he would be taken to the place, show where he has hidden it, and gave it away. But that wouldn't save his life, because 3 months later, or 4 months later, he would be called again. And again, the question would be, we know you gave us some diamonds and some foreign currency before, but we also know you didn't give us everything. Let's have the rest. And the same procedure would be applied. And therefore, anybody, I don't think there is anyone who actually survived the torture in the Kripo.
And this happened to your friends?
And that happened to quite a number of people, usually to people who were well off before the war and well known, or to people who were denounced. There were few people in the ghetto, Jewish people, unfortunately, who would give information to the Germans, to the Kripo, in exchange for some favors, for food. And few of those people were well known to everybody, and everyone, of course, was very frightened of them.
Did no one try to take action against them?
They were killed later when we went to the camps. They were killed. There were very few of those people, and they were well known to others. And they were the only real collaborators but as far as I know, none of them survived.
How were they well known? Wouldn't it have been in their interest?
Well, they were seen going into the Kripo building, not as people who were called in. Their names were known, and they were well dressed, they were well known, and feared.
So if they denounced someone, they gave information that person had jewelry? Or
if they denounced someone, they were condemning that person to a death by torture, which I try to describe. And I've seen people on stretchers being carried out from the Kripo building, because I was passing that building every day, and they were just swollen and beaten up.
What else did the criminal police do besides investigate people in this way?
I don't know what else they did. I don't know there was a case where people were committing suicides, and there was once I saw, I didn't see it, but the body was lying near the post office. Someone jumped from one of the bridges. There were bridges over the, from one part of the ghetto to another, over the main road where the tram cars were passing. We were not allowed to walk on that street. There were barbed wire on either side, and timber bridges across from one side to the ghetto to the other.
Had they been specially built?
They were specially built. There were 3 bridges like that, linking one part of the ghetto with another, because the tram car was passing right through the main street. And it happened that people would jump off those bridges in order to commit suicide. And one of the corpses was lying near the post office, and the kripo sort of came to take photographs and to see what it was all about. So that was their function as well, to see. Well, there were criminal police, but as far as the ghetto people were concerned, they were just a torture chamber to extract any wealth that might still have been in the ghetto.
Was suicide common?
There were few suicides a day, I would say. Not so common. People wanted to live, but there were suicides. But you didn't have the facilities to commit suicide. It wasn't easy or probably possible to buy poison. There were not very tall buildings. The tallest were maybe 4-story high. You didn't have tower blocks. But in spite of it, some people did commit suicide.
What effect did this have on others in the ghetto? Was it disapproved of?
I cannot answer that really. You didn't read any papers, you didn't read any articles about it. I don't remember any sort of talk about it.
Did the criminal police patrol the ghetto? Or was that left?
No, there were not many. There were not many of them. There might have been 10 or 20 armed men. They were walking like detectives with guns, and they were not guarding the ghetto. It was the ghetto was guarded by policemen with guns around the barbed wire every 100 yards. There was a policeman in a green uniform with a gun, and anybody who got too close to the barbed wire or who was suspected of trying to smuggle was shot. There was a time when every day few people were shot near the simply by walking too close to the barbed wire.
These guards in the green uniforms, Where would they be from?
They were the...
Were they Polish?
No, they were Germans. They were Germans. Then there was the Gestapo who came into the ghetto now and then. But they came usually when there was the curfew, and in order to organize the sending out of all the children and hospitals and the people who couldn't work. In March of 1942, the resettling, the sending out of the Jews and with their families who couldn't work, who didn't work, came to a stop. And my uncle by then somehow managed to organize so that he, his wife and his son would be taken to the Warsaw Ghetto. Apparently, he gave $50 in gold coins to somebody. Probably it ended in either the Kripo and the Gestapo pockets. And there were a few families. I went to see them. I went to the Bałucki Rynek. This was the place where the Germans met the Jewish authorities. They left the Lodz ghetto in May, at the beginning of May 1942. And together with them were some maybe three or four other families, a small van came. I was watching from a window from one of the buildings overlooking the square. And a van arrived, and they were loaded onto the van, and they left the ghetto, and they went to the Warsaw ghetto.
Why had they decided to go to the Warsaw ghetto?
Well, they decided because when they had the papers to be evacuated, they made the arrangement. My uncle had jewelry and foreign currency, and therefore he managed to bribe someone. I don't know how he did it.
Did he think the Warsaw ghetto would be safer?
He must have thought the Warsaw ghetto would be safer because it was in Poland, and whereas the Lodz ghetto was called Litzmannstadt ghetto, and it was inside the Third Reich.
Do you know what happened to them?
Yes, I know that my aunt died, and my cousin and my uncle, I don't know exactly, but probably they were sent to Treblinka because they didn't survive. But I know from my cousin that my aunt, who was in the Warsaw ghetto and did survive, I know that she died in the Warsaw ghetto a few months later.
What was the situation like in the Lodz ghetto by this time, early 1942, for food?
There was a lot of hunger, and there was starvation, and people who couldn't buy, somehow to organize more food than the basic ration, were starving. And I don't know how many were starving every day, but I would say in that summer thousands and thousands of people must have died of starvation, TB.
In the summer of 42?
In the summer of 42.
How did you manage?
I managed because, first of all, I had a little more food because I worked at the post office. I had another, well, everybody who worked had a bit more food. In spite of it, I was very hungry. But my uncle left me a few hundred watches, many silver watches, which he couldn't take with him. And I, by selling two or three watches at a time, I could buy half a loaf of bread or a bit of butter or something else.
Who would you sell the watches to?
Well, there were a few small shops, watchmaker shops. I would walk in and say, I would not go to the same shop more than once or twice, for fear of being denounced. And I would go in and say, my father isn't here, these are my few last possessions, would you be able to buy? And I would get some marks, which were the ghetto money, hundreds of marks, 500 marks or 800 marks for the two or three watches. And for that I could buy half a loaf of bread on the black market or a whole loaf, which were astronomical prices, or some soups. And I would take a little more food to my sister, who was in the orphanage. And that helped me to... I was always hungry. In spite of the fact that I had probably twice as much food as anybody on the basic ration. In spite of that, I was very hungry, but I wasn't starving. And the other thing, I forced myself, when I got the allocated food ration for a week or 2 weeks, I would divide it exactly into 7 portions or into the 14 portions, depending for what length of time you receive the food. The people who died very quickly were those who didn't have the willpower to control it, and they would have no food left for 2 or 3 days prior to the next issue. When they were then issued with the food for a week or a fortnight, they would then eat it in 1 day, and then of course they were sentenced to die of starvation. And there were many people who just couldn't resist that, who couldn't cope with that.
Would the ration alter? Why would you sometimes receive a ration for a week and sometimes for a month?
Well, sometimes, I think it was for week normally, bread and basic, but sometimes potatoes you would get maybe for 2 weeks. It was quite well organized, and you knew where you were, but sometimes you would get a few more potatoes, and the temptation to eat another piece of bread was so great, that's unbelievable. People cannot understand what it means when you get a loaf of bread and you have to divide it into 7 portions, small portions, and not to touch a crumb more, because that would mean disaster.
After your uncle had left for the Warsaw Ghetto with his family, did you continue to live in the room alone?
Yes, I continued there until September 1942.
Did you not have a lot of space to yourself in comparison to other people in the ghetto then?
No, because by then many people were sent out, many people died. So the accommodation, I think originally there was maybe 250,000 people in the ghetto. By that time there might have been 150 or maybe even less. By then, almost everybody was working in the ghetto in various establishments.
Were there any children left in the ghetto?
Yes. Now, that's what happened towards the end of August. An announcement was made that at the beginning of September there will be a curfew and nobody will go to work and nobody will be allowed to go out onto the streets except the policemen, the fire brigade, and for some reason the post office, the postman. So we were informed that we will be used for taking messages from one place to the other. And the curfew was organized in order to evacuate from the ghetto not whole families anymore as before, but in order to take away all the children, all the old people and sick people, all the people who couldn't work anymore. The first day or the first night there were terrible scenes because the Jewish police were ordered and they were trying to organize the taking away of the children, and it didn't work. I was on duty then. I cannot describe the wailing and the noises that the mothers were making when someone came in and said, "Your children have to be." I had nothing to do with it. First of all, we passed a square and there were people hanging in the square. That was, I think, to terrorize the
men or women.
I don't know, probably a few men were hanging there, but I tried not to look in the direction. It was getting dark, And that night, I don't know why we were sort of involved in it, the few messengers at the from the post office, because we had nothing to do. But I remember the wailing and the...
Where were you? Place. Inside the post office?
No, we were outside. We were outside in the hospital area, which was already evacuated, and the children and the old people and those to be evacuated were supposed to be brought to the hospital, but nobody was brought, nothing happened. And the following day the Gestapo joined they began to the selection. And from every block of flats, from all the tenements, they would come into the courtyard. And all the people from the building would have to go into the courtyard, and they would select. Some people had to go left, and some people had to go right. And those who went to one side were loaded onto lorries, and those lorries were taken to the few hospitals, mainly the hospital or some other evacuation places. And from there they were taken in huge lorries by roll commando. The men were called roll commando by Germans. And many people were shot during that selection process.
Why were they shot?
Because if they tried to run away, or if they were told to go to the left and they went to the right. And sometimes they were shot just to terrorize, just to frighten the others so that they would be quiet. I was at the hospital doing nothing. They never gave me any messages to take from place to place. I had more food then.
Did you feel guilty that you were safe and had food?
No, I didn't feel guilty. I felt I was it wasn't real. It was a nightmare going on around me. And somehow I see it, and I remember when one of the roll commando, which was an enormous roll lorries, arrived outside the hospital, and the nurses, the children were up to the age of about 11. 10, 11, they were herded onto the lorries, onto the huge lorry, and the young ones, the 1-year-old or 1.5, were brought by the nurses